Thank you. I'm Ken. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
My sobriety date is December 1st, 1981, and my home group is the 1728 group in Madison, Wisconsin. By the way, it is not Wisconsin, it's Wisconsin. I have to tell you that I really appreciated Herman's comments on three angels on the panel. It looks to me like it's two, but I'm going to use that with my wife. There may come an occasion where I'll have to remind her of that once in a while. Ashley and I were talking before the panel started. Ashley, right? Ashley. And we both got sober when we were 20 years old, which to me is an absolute miracle. And we were talking about, even when she got sober, there just were not many young people in AA. I got sober, by the way, Herman, you'll be gratified. I got sober in North Carolina. Anybody here from the Fayetteville, Fort Bragg area? No? Well, we got to work on that. For those of you in the Georgia area, there's some 12-step opportunities in North Carolina. Now I lost my train of thought. I'm Ken, I'm an alcoholic. So there weren't a lot of new people in, or young people in AA back then, and to look around and see the number of young people is just, to me, it's breathtaking. I got to tell you, as a young person in AA, well, even before that, I didn't want this. I was 20 years old. I was looking for things to get into. I wasn't looking to quit anything. There has to be something fairly compelling, I think, for somebody of that age to want what you have. And for me, it was the threat of prison. That's fairly compelling. I was in the Army at the time, and I had a company commander who was also fairly compelling. And I came to AA just to stay out of trouble. We hear myriad reasons of why we come to Alcoholics Anonymous at whatever age we are when we get here. And frankly, I don't know that it makes a lot of difference. The thing that always intrigues me is, why do we stay? Why did I stay when I was, in fact, my last drink was my 20th birthday? Why did I stay, you know, when most people are just really getting a good ramp up on their drinking, and by that time, I'd had enough. I didn't know I had enough, but I'd had enough. And it comes down to this, and I'll tell you just a little bit about it. I obviously don't have time to tell my whole story, but I heard a message, and it was not necessarily a message of don't drink and go to meetings, although not drinking is important for sobriety. I heard a message of the fourth dimension, I'll put it that way, living in the spirit. Or living with the Spirit. And that's what kept me here. And I'll be honest, at the time, I didn't even know it. I had a sponsor. I was an enlisted man in the Army, by the way. I had a sponsor who I found out tragically after I asked him to be my sponsor. He was an officer. And when I found out he was an officer, of course, I was young and dumb and naive. And relatively speaking, and I was afraid to not do what he told me to do. So when he says, you remember when you got, maybe when you got sober, you try to read the big book and, you know, you can't follow along. It doesn't make any sense. You read a paragraph and you think, well, what did I just read? So Walt says, why don't you come over to my house and we'll read the big book together? Well, what I heard was an order to come over to Walt's house, and we're going to read the big book. And I'm grateful that it happened that way, because had I not heard his suggestions as orders, I would have never grabbed a hold of this elusive brass ring. I would still be out there, possibly even yet today. I have some family history that demonstrates that I may very well be either drinking or dead by now. And we started reading the big book together, and as we were reading the big book together, since Herman said we have to be honest, Walt read the big book to me. And as we did that, we worked the steps. And it's the steps that bring about the spiritual experience that I understand today. As a result of those steps that bring about the spiritual experience, I haven't even had a desire for a drink in more than 33 years. To me, that's just, to say 33 years too, man. And I'm only 39. I mean, my first 6 years were tough, but I'll tell you what. Okay, it's an honest program. So my point in saying all that is we can have the spiritual experience even if that's not what we're after, even if that's not what we're seeking. How many of us actually come in here wanting to have a spiritual experience? I won't, but I dare say if I ask everybody to raise their hand, if they came in here looking for a spiritual experience, best case scenario, one or two hands might go up. And I would say also that maybe those people weren't working an honest program. We come in here because the heat's on, and we think the solution is not drinking. And the solution is not drinking. Guys that I have the great honor and privilege of working with know that one of the sayings that just makes me crazy in AA is, and we've all heard it, don't drink and go to meetings. And the obvious question is for me, if I could not drink, why would I go to meetings? The other thing that occurs to me is in that just not drinking and going to meetings, we miss so much more. I could talk for hours about what happens, what I've seen happen with others when we just don't drink and go to meetings and fail to seek after, to search out, to have that spiritual experience. And you've all seen that, and it's not a pretty sight. So how does all of this relate to the daily reprieve? That's what the daily reprieve is the spiritual experience. To me today, it's not hard to not drink. It's also, or any of the other things that I used to do, and for the sake of full disclosure, I used to be involved with a lot of other so-called outside issues that we won't get into. But I don't have a desire to do any of that today. What comes as a result of practicing 12 steps, might I say 12 traditions, and 12 concepts, is a miracle and a blessing that works in all situations in my life. And now it's no longer about not drinking. Again, the not drinking part is important. But that's not the issue for me today. The issue for me today is to continue to strive for that spiritual experience. One of the things that I talk about with some of my guys with some frequency is even after all of these years, Alcoholics Anonymous for me is fun. By the way, I'm also still, after all these years, one of the busiest people that I know in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've served in pretty much almost every level of the general service structure. Even though I'm out of the general service structure now, I still can find things to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're bored in Alcoholics Anonymous, you ain't doing it right. My sponsor would say, if you're bored in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're boring. I won't go so far as to say that, and he's not here, so. Now I lost my train of thought. Maybe it's time for me to sit down and shut up. I will tell you this, that specifically, well, let me put it this way. One of the things that I found in sobriety is we get to a certain level, and then we, at least I, tend to plateau at times. I think we've all been there. Anybody who's been sober for more than 10 minutes, you get to a certain point and you think, oh, this feels wonderful. And it does. It really does. But instead of that being the catalyst for us to sit back and relax, that ought to be the catalyst for us, I think, to go to the next level, so to speak, seeking greater to live in the realm of the Spirit. That's what our promise is, specifically that phrase that is our panel topic today comes out of the 10th step. And what we have agreed to, promised to, or whatever, in the 10th step is to continue to look at me. That's what I make the commitment to do, is to continue to look at me and to make, you know, the long story short, so to speak, what is it that stands in the way of me and my usefulness to God? That's what I need to eliminate today. That's what I find brings great joy and happiness in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, not just don't drink and go to meetings. It's been just an exciting, exciting experience for me. I'm not one of those folks, as you gathered, who came into Alcoholics Anonymous and felt like I was home. But even now, I do feel like you're not a room full of strangers. You really are a room full of friends. We were talking before the panel started, but what we have to remember is you're my people. And what a blessing it is for me to say that here we are, the throwaways of society, and we come together at an event like this, and we are really people who would normally not mix. I see a lot of hugging. I see a lot of hollering and hooping it up and having a big old time. What a contrast from the days of our drinking. We owe that to the spiritual experience. Thank you all very much.
I appreciate that, Ken. You know, Ken brought up a lot of things. You ask most people what's the first thing they saw when they came to Alcoholics Anonymous, they say step one. First thing I saw when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous was this second part of tradition two. It says our leaders are the trusted servants. They do not govern. I said, ain't nobody gonna tell me what to do. I'll be all right. You know, the thing is, I love my sobriety, and the thing is, today my name is Herman Ara. And tomorrow it might be Rashid, and the thing is, you know, that was a lady, I seem to cause people to get perturbed in Alcoholics Anonymous, and one day she confronted me, she said, Herman, you're confusing the newcomer. She said, one minute you name Herman, next minute you name Rashid. She said, what is the issue? And I said, sometimes I forget who I am. I hope I never forget what I am. I'm not one of those that sit in the rooms and talk about young folks and old folks. And I don't apologize for that, because I have a disease that doesn't care if you're from Yale or jail, Park Avenue or Park Bench. If you got it, you got it. And the sad part about it, all young folks don't get to be old folks. See, I'm trying to get older, but it's like this today. And the thing is, I see they getting nervous up here, you know. Now I'm going all the way to another universe. I'm going all the way out there to California. At our next speaker. because make sure I get it right, Teresa C.
My name's Teresa Cordero. I'm an alcoholic. Is this for me? Is this yours?
Isn't that mine?
Okay, it's mine, huh? Finders keepers. Thank you so much for sharing. It's such an honor and a privilege to be here. I know you hear that said a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous from speakers, but I'm really overwhelmed to be able to ask and to participate in this capacity. I just feel really lucky and blessed to be here and to have the life that I have. And Santa Barbara in the house! Woo! Woo! Thank you for coming. And I have a little bit of an accent, so California by way of Massachusetts. But I've lived in California for over 30 years now, and I still have a little bit of an accent. So, whoops, I'm falling apart. Everything's falling down here. I have to close this. I'll start reading stuff. And I want to thank Eva. Eva S. is the chairman of the convention, and I've known Eva for probably 25 years. She used to live in Santa Barbara, and we were pretty good friends, and so I knew she was the chairman and all. And some while ago, I called her and said, hey, how's it going? Do you need help with anything? Do you need volunteers for this or that? She goes, well, yeah, I'd likely to have you speak at something. I'm like, well, let me know if you need volunteers for anything, or, you know, stand by the door and greet or something. I'm happy to do it. But anyway, so here I am, and I'm just so honored to be asked, and it's awesome to be here. And this is my third international convention, and they're just a blast. Our topic today is a daily reprieve, and you know, actually, I think when you think about it, all we really have is today. You know, everybody, no matter how much time we have here, we have just today. And my sobriety date is March 5th, 1983, so really, I have 32 years. just today. But if you're new, welcome. If this is your first convention, welcome. I hope you attend more than this. I mean, they're just a blast. They keep getting better and better. So I just want to briefly qualify. I just want to tell you a little bit about what I was like. This is my last night of drinking. And the reason I drank, just really specifically was I was consumed with fear from the time I can remember, from the time I was 5 years old, consumed with fear, anxiety, restlessness, irritable, discontent, all the stuff that Dr. Silkworth talks about in his opinion. And, you know, because I didn't even want to go to kindergarten. Okay, so that's when I noticed, like, I don't like people. And you know, retrospect, I wish I drank at five. If I had known about the effects of alcoholism or the effects of alcohol it would have on me, I would have drank in kindergarten. So, okay, fast forward 24 years. I got sober when I was 24, and this is the last night of my drinking. I'm living in L.A. My mother moved out to L.A. to take care of me. I'd been fired from jobs. I just really basically could not take care of myself anymore. So anyway, I ended up getting a place with my mother, and I finally totaled my car, and I had 4 DUIs altogether and arrested for all the various things, thrown in a padded cell. That's a good story, but we don't have time. And so my mother, I would call her from the bars. I hung around Venice Beach. And I would call my mother for a ride and, 2 o'clock in the morning when the bars are closing. And she's like, I'll be right there, you know, because what's the alternative, right? You'll be right there, sweetheart. And so codependent, I don't know. So this one night she comes and picks me up. And apparently I took a bottle of beer from the bar with me. And we get in the car and we're on our way home. But I'm an alcoholic. I have the mental obsession, you know, and the physical allergy. Once I start to drink, I can't stop. And I just don't want the party to end. Potty, not potty, potty. So we're in the car and we're stopped at a light in Marina Del Rey, you know, L.A., west side, right? Kind of near LAX. Anyway, we're stopped at a red light and I said, hey, Mom, thanks for coming, but I'm going to go find a party, see if there's a bar down the street. Maybe they'll let me in because sometimes they did after hours. You know, you could go hang out, play pool or whatever. And I start to get out of the car, and she's grabbing onto me, and I'm trying to break free, and she's grabbing onto my pocketbook strap, and finally the strap on my pocketbook broke. That's how much we were struggling in the front seat at a red light. So the strap breaks, and I'm able to escape, and off. Shoot, and I just think nothing of this, and I just start walking down the street. She throws the car in park, and comes in the middle of the street, busy, Lincoln Boulevard, goes to Karen Park and comes after me, and she takes the bottle of beer from my hand, and she smashed it, and it smashed in the street. I'm like, oh, my God, my last beer. And I was just ready to fist fight her, and she was ready to fist fight me back. In the middle of the street, mind you, not on the sidewalk. Anyway, call this my spiritual awakening, my moment of clarity, my surrender, if you will. And I just thought, oh, my God, what am I doing? This is my mother. I'm about to fist fight her in the middle of the street over a beer. And it's just like, I just really lost it. And I just started crying, and we both got in the car, and we got home. By now it's like 2:33, you know, and I called this one guy I knew, whose number I guess I knew. And, you know, I don't think we had cell phones then. It was 83. And I just called this one guy I knew, and not because he had 9 months of sobriety, but he did. And I remember when he was going to AA, I'm going, what are you going to AA for? He just smoked a lot of coke. He's just a cocaine addict, but go, whatever. Anyway, this is the one person that I called who's not, and I said, you have to come get me. My mother's driving me crazy. So, and that whole night, that whole little story I told you, my mother and I never discussed. We don't talk about things, feelings. We're not that kind of way. It's a loving family, but we just don't talk about feelings and stuff like that. It just kind of like forget it. Just, you know, it's kind of like if you don't mention it, it just kind of didn't happen or something. I don't know. So a whole year goes by, and it's my one-year birthday, and I'm having dinner with my mother, and she started telling me that story. She mentioned something about it. I'm like, what? What? It was like all of revelation. I was in such a blackout. I was a blackout drinker. And she told me this story, and I'm like, oh, my God, really? Oh, my God, oh, I'm so sorry. It was like I was watching a movie. And then, you know, kind of was coming back a little bit. And so, anyway, she's happy I'm sober. She's really happy I'm sober. And my brother's an alcoholic also. He just celebrated 30 years. I just went to his 30-year party down in L.A. And, you know, it's an amazing life we have. It's an amazing life that Alcoholics Anonymous has given us. And as what Ken touched on, it's about the spiritual experience for me. Yeah, when I was new, no. Did I want to, would I raise my hand? Am I here for a spiritual experience? No, certainly not. I wasn't even an alcoholic. I didn't even want to go to AA. I came because my friend said, I'm going to a meeting tonight. Do you want to go? Or why don't you come with me? I said, well, I'm not an alcoholic. But, you know, because the thought of me not drinking wasn't really an option. Because, again, still consumed with fear, anxiety all the time. It mattered so much to me what you thought about me, even if you weren't thinking about me. I thought you were thinking about me. What are you thinking about me? And if you're not, you know what I mean? You know what I mean, right? Because you're my people. You get it. And, you know, when I drank and that fear and anxiety all went away, it was like, phew, no wonder Dad drinks, you know, just wow. It was the magic elixir. It really was. And so, you know, for some reason, I started doing the deal. I started doing AA, and as a result of working the steps, I had the spiritual experience that people talk about. It's something that we really shouldn't miss. Oh, I didn't check the time. So for some reason, I got a sponsor. I started doing the steps, and I got commitments, and I just began my journey here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's been quite a ride. It's been a frickin' roller coaster ride. It's just craziness. You know, so in the book it actually says, you know, I think it's in the part about the resentments, you know, doing our inventory. And it says that our hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. That's what I hope to have here. And I've gotten that. And when I'm in that zone, when I'm in the spiritual, God loves me zone, I'm completely fearless, you know, for those instants. I'd like to say it's really long-lasting, but it's a daily reprieve, it's a daily thing, and I must act on that every day. I must seek God's will, not mine, but I must seek God's will every day and try to stay in that spiritual cocoon that he is there. It's there for us for the taking. And my higher power is like so all-powerful, and he's always present, and it's me who's not always present. You know, it's me who goes away. So, you know, and I know, of course, and I've seen many examples, I know I'll never be cured of alcoholism. There's no cure for an alcoholic like me, but I do have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And I have to, you know, try to keep in my mind that this really works. You know, the spiritual solution is the answer for me. And when I'm in that, you know, I live in Santa Barbara. It's a gorgeous, beautiful resort town, you know, and I can really get in the pity pot. I can really, for no apparent reason, just feel sorry for myself some days. And I think, okay, wait, I got this house, I have a car, I have this awesome job, what's wrong with me? Like, oh, did I pray today? You know, it's like always goes back to that. And, you know, stuff's going to happen, you know, adversity happens, things come up, there's adversity. I read this thing by an anonymous person, to paraphrase it, says something like, God gives us adversity to use as rungs on the ladder to spiritual progress. And, okay, actually 5 years ago I was in San Antonio and I was just, just found out my not yet ex-husband, we were separated, had a girlfriend. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, and in the meeting before over here, the guy was, told his wife he wanted a divorce, and I guess a couple months later after that, I guess she committed suicide. So, and that's kind of how I felt, like I wanted to kill myself. And but I have a son, and I have a couple kids, but my son is in Santa Barbara, and I mean, I tell you, there was nothing. I'd never faced such adversity in my whole sobriety or my whole life as, I mean, I've been through deaths in the family. My father passed away and, you know, just all this stuff happened, but never was it as painful as this divorce was going to be. And the adversity of the rungs to spiritual growth, I tell you, I sure grew spiritually, you know, when all else fails is that, and is work with other alcoholics. And so there was no tunnel. I was not in any tunnel. It was just complete blackness. There was no light. There was no end of the tunnel. It was just like black. And so I just kept praying and praying, and I got more active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And pretty soon, there's a little bit of gray, and pretty soon the little veil came off, and pretty soon I could see light again. It was like, oh, thank you, God, for getting me through that. And you know what? And just thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, because it gave me the wherewithal to think of somebody else besides myself during that adversity, because I have a gun. And I was really thinking of, you know, and but I thought, no. My son came over to my house every day. He's like 20, 21. He would come over to my house every morning before he went to work, and he would check on me. And he would just hold me, and I would just cry. I'm like, I don't want a divorce, you know. And it's not the end of the world. Okay, so getting back to the 5 years ago, when this all started, I saw Clancy, and I'm like, Clancy, I'm getting a divorce. And because I got sober in the Pacific group, so I know him. So anyway, well, Clancy got a divorce. He goes, ah, get away. There's worse things, Teresa. To leave me alone, you know, that kind of thing. you know, the kind-hearted Clancy we all know and love, right? But I'm like, no, there are not worse things. But of course there are worse things. That's so not the worst thing that can happen. But at the time, it seems like it. You know what I mean? But of course it's not. Here's my dear friend Pam, whose dear, darling granddaughter was going through this horrible illness with her cancer. And I have friends like Pam in my life to support me, and friends like Kathy in my life to support me. And Kathy wanted to take my guns away from me, too. But, you know, I had this small, so if you knew, get yourself a couple of good friends. They'll save your life. And fortunately, thank God I had that. And I was taught early on in my sobriety to get a couple of girlfriends. You know, it was okay for me to date in my early sobriety because my sponsor did, so she said I could, so I did. But, and yeah, so when it didn't work out with the male prostitute, you know, I had my women friends to fall back on. But he was sober and he was working construction. He wasn't doing that anymore. But anyway, you know, so when things don't work out, you have your women friends, and thank you, guys. You saved my life. Thank you so much. And so to see Pam go through something like that, my divorce doesn't seem so big. My troubles don't seem so bad. You know, you look at people around you, everybody's always got something worse, don't they? I mean, so anyway, I made it through that, and, you know, I just feel so blessed. And so, you know, I sponsor women. I try to help them carry the message. I try to carry the message to them. And, you know, like I said, you know, and I get embarrassed. Like, my life can be so good. I get embarrassed that I felt so bad. I look at how I was and who that person I was back 5 years ago, and I just feel embarrassed for myself because I was so out of it and depressed. And it was, you know, I'd show up to work and I'd be crying at my desk, but I showed up. I was taught to show up like sober feet. My feet take me. I'm supposed to be here. I'm going. You know, I'm supposed to go to work. I'm going. And so I'd be sitting at my desk crying, and my boss would come out and go, are you okay? And I'd go, no. And he'd just turn around and walk away and leave me alone. You know, and I'm just really lucky and blessed to have that. And I don't know. I have no idea how long. Am I done? I just totally didn't look at the time. How long has it been?
You got a few minutes.
A few more minutes. Okay, so. Yeah, but you know what? In the other meeting, too, they were also talking about how they put new stuff in the book all the time. And they do, right? That's bold in italics when. But I don't know how old I was, but I think I was about 3 years old when I saw that or read or heard, willingness is the key. You know, as long as I'm willing to do the action, as long as I'm willing to rely on my higher power, then it kind of always, it all comes down, happens full circle. Another one of my favorite parts of the book is working with others. When I was new, I went to a book study, and I had a few days, you know, 3 days maybe. It was like my second or third meeting, and it was a book study, and I didn't know what you did at a book study. So they read, it was the chapter before, chapter 7 is working with others, I believe. And that chapter says, our next chapter is devoted entirely to step 12. I'm like, what? Whatever. Okay, step 12. But in the beginning of that chapter, it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And that's, there's my, again, my daily reprieve. You know, when I was going through my adversity phase, like, that's a good term, isn't it? My adversity phase. When I was going through that, and my phone would ring, and it would be a sponsee, and I would be, oh, thank God, how are you, Sharon? You know what I mean? It's like anything to get my mind off of me. And, you know, I just thank God for the wherewithal that for AA, it's given me the wherewithal to not think about myself so much, because it can be a dangerous neighborhood in here. And, you know, 80 years, I mean, that's not really that long ago. You know what I mean? 80 years for Alcoholics Anonymous to just be in existence, when you think about how long people have been drinking, thousands of years, right? And it's only 80 years. That's a blip on the radar. And so for us to be a part of this and for us all to come together, I've seen people from the Ukraine. I would have said hi, but I don't know if he knows English. So a guy from the Ukraine, I sat down earlier with some people from Ireland. I couldn't understand a word they were saying. It's like they have these weird accents. But, yeah, I just, and how about Georgia? Any Georgia in the house? Georgia, woo! Oh, yay! Thank you so much for having us. It's a lovely city. Kathy and I were talking earlier. Oh, I gave Kathy a really fine talk last night. You should have been there. She's my roommate. But she liked it. But you guys have a great city, and it's really just an honor to be here, and I hope you guys all have fun. Thank you very much.
There's a gentleman in the back. His name is Lee F. I want to stand up, and I want you to turn around and look at him. He's not one of us. But today is, he has more time in sobriety than I do. That's his father right next door. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was looking for every reason in the world not to be here. And the thing is, God put Lee in my life. And every meeting I go to that Nick, his father's fortunate to bring him to, he always walks over to me, and we do a smooth hand five. And what that does, it takes all the worry out of my life. It gives my sobriety meaning and purpose. There's a medallion that they sell sometimes, and the thing is, I have several. It says, serenity isn't freedom from the storm. It's peace within the storm. That's whether you're alcoholic or not. And the thing is, my friend got to talking about exes. I got nervous back there. Because all my exes are good housekeepers. They kept the house. So... I'm going to leave that alone. There's a South Carolina delegate there who happens to be my sponsor, Ed Marshall. I pray about tonight. So let's move on before y'all get mad at me. Now, I know we're going to get a standing ovation now, because our next person, it's from Georgia. And Ashley didn't say nothing about Georgia on my mind, but Ashley, here it is.
Oh my gosh, I am incredibly nervous. My name is Ashley Millsaps, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. I'm from Sugar Hill, Georgia, which is about 45 minutes from here. I'm really grateful to be here, and I'd like to take a moment to thank my friend Rebecca for asking me to do this. they said not to lie. So I will get her back one day for asking me to do this. I will say that I am grateful. I saw some pictures of the bigger rooms, and I had kind of scoped them out, and I was like hyperventilating this morning thinking about being in one of those rooms. And then as we were sitting here and people were in, and then they were ushering out and in and ushering out, I just was like, okay, it's going to be what it's going to be, and God will take over. So thank you both for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, and I thoroughly enjoyed listening. I am the baby on the panel. My sobriety date's May 8th of 2005. 10 years. So I am 10 of the 80 in Alcoholics Anonymous, and what an awesome 80. The people that have come before me that have shown me how to live life, how to do sober one day at a time in my own skin, I just owe my life to, and that's why I say yes, and those are the women that I come from. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. My home group's A Vision for You. We meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We study our literature. We're in the Big Book on Tuesdays and the 12 and 12 on Thursdays, and then we study the traditions and concepts once a month. So come by and see us if you're ever out in Sugar Hill, Georgia. Daily reprieve. That's our topic, right? And I didn't leave anything out of that, right? Okay, I'm just going to go away now. So daily reprieve, and I go to the Big Book when I'm given a topic. For those of you that don't know, it's on 84, and we are in step 10, as some of my other panelists had mentioned. And I'm just going to read just a minute. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. And I'm going to give a few definitions. I think that I know what that means, but when I really look at the definitions, I'm kind of painted this picture. I think of the reprieve, and my favorite definition of that is to delay the punishment of someone who is sentenced to death. Contingent is dependent, and maintain is to continue doing. And so how do I continue every day to squash my ego, not live in full flight, self-centered fear, and not take a drink? I don't know how to do that. I am a self-centered alcoholic. I drink when shit's good. Excuse me. I drink when it's good, when it's bad, when it's up, when it's down. And you know, when I got here, I heard the stories and I heard the message. It's not how I drank or how you drank or your bottom or where you're at or your status or any of that stuff that I could identify with. I did not want the spiritual experience either when I got here. I didn't want any of that. But what I wanted was the people that were talking, and they were comfortable. They were comfortable sober. They were comfortable in their own skin. And I did not know what a day looked like that, except through what they had and what they shared. And so that kept me around long enough that I do want that. I want to live comfortably sober in my own skin. And that's the only way I know how to do that. I can stop drinking. I can put the drink down. I know how to stop many different times, how to stay stopped and how to live. I don't know how. And it's the people that have come before me that have taught me how to do that. And this part in the book, Big Book, when it's talking about this 10th step and this daily reprieve and maintaining my spiritual condition, I have to follow those directions for this alcoholic if I want to stay sober. I'm okay in the big things. Usually the big things or the big tragedies or that kind of stuff, like I can roll with that. It's the mundane every day, going to the grocery store again with the kids this week, going to the doctor, going to fill up the tank with gas, going to another meeting another sponsee. I'm like, I've done this, we've done this, we've done this yesterday, we did it last week. You know what I mean? It can get really complacent really fast. And so I'm not always on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous, but how do I connect up with God? And I use 10, 11, and 12. The the 12 and 12 in step 11, and I'm going to paraphrase, it talks about the unshakable foundation for life. And that when we're utilizing 10, 11, and 12, that's what gives me that unshakable foundation. And so I continue to come back, and I use the women in my life and the men in my home group to help me squash my ego, to get right size, no matter what it may be going on. My life on any given day, I wake up, my knees hit the floor, I approach the top of the stairs, I look down upon the living room, and that does not look like how I think it should look. I mean, the kids are not the way that they need to be behaving, and he is not doing what he needs to be doing. And I know today that my job is to turn right back around and go back in the bedroom and hit my knees again to pray. And then call my sponsor. And if I don't get her, call somebody else. I have a network because I was taught to have that network of people that know what's going on with me, that can redirect me and change that perception for me. So when I hit my knees and I spot where I'm off and I spot where I'm wrong and I'm able to squash that, the big book then gives me those very clear directions when it says, let me flip to it. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God to remove them at once. We discuss them immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And that's my job. It may not look like I think it should look every day. And I may be off balance. You know, there are those times when I just am. But I have very specific directions. And so when I hit my knees and I call my sponsor or I call somebody else, then I can say, how can I be of service to my family? And in all different areas of my life, I have been taught that my job is to develop that vision of what I believe my God would have me be. So I think, how can I strive to be a better mother, a better daughter, a better wife, a better parent, a better member of Alcoholics Anonymous? And knowing that I fall short of that every day, but I have developed that idea of who I think God would have me be. And when I'm utilizing these steps together and I'm hooking it back up with God after I see my part, and then I'm of service. Because being with that newcomer, being with the women that I work with, being the person who's, you know, making the coffee, those are the things that remind me. That's where the message of the plight of the newcomer is. And I'm reminded of what self-centered alcoholism looks like. Because I'm not cured of it, and I can't see it in me. You know, the women God has put in my life are the women that show me how grateful I can be for my life today. Because I'm so easily diverted from that. I'm so easy to point out what's not right. And then when I really connect with God and I try to do my best on any given day, knowing that I'm never going to get to perfection and I'm always going to have a way out if I should so choose. To take a drink today is not necessarily, you know, it doesn't cross my mind. And I am free. I have that freedom that, you know, my sanity's been restored when we're starting to talk about step 10 in the big book. But my alcoholism is not cured, and it is alive and well. Every day it's with me, and I thank God have a program that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me to not live in that. I can choose to stay there as long as I want. And there have been times in sobriety when it's looked really bad, you know. Jumping off place sober is not really great, but I don't have to take that alcoholism, those defects, to the nth level today. I can choose to reach for solution. I'm still human. I still fall short of it all the time, but it's not like it was when I got here, and I'm very grateful for that. I have no idea what time it is or how long I've been up here. I feel like it's been really quick. Okay, well, I'm going to need time. You are right. It's not good enough because I might just stand here and talk.
Good for the moment.
All right. I don't know what else to say other than that. I'm going to sit down now and shut up. So thank you.
everybody give the panelists another hand, please.